About 12 years ago, beekeepers started noticing that their hives were getting a little bit weird. Bees were dying or just going missing, and it started to happen at shocking rates. And soon there was a panic, and scientists couldn't exactly understand why bee populations were seeming to just fall off a cliff. They called the mystery colony collapse disorder, and they started to imagine a world and a food system without bees. Over a decade later, thankfully we still have bees, but are we out of the woods? For an update on what's going on in bee health, we're turning to Bernardo Nino, who's a bee researcher at UC Davis. Hey, Bernardo, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start with something really basic. Can you describe what a bee colony is?
So a bee colony is defined as really the bees in the colony, the comb, the developing bees. It's something that people use often interchangeably with hive, but the true definition of the hive is the bees plus the box, is just an easy way to put it.
So it's like a community of bees, like a city of bees. And what's a healthy one like? How does it develop?
So there's lots of ways, I guess, for hives and colonies to get started. But from a managed honeybee colony perspective, you could start in the spring either from packages, which is essentially like a shoebox full of bees, about 3 pounds of bees, plus a queen, and you literally shake the bees onto the equipment, and they will start drawing wax, and the queen will start laying eggs. The queen has the capacity to lay around 1,500 to maybe 2,000 eggs a day. And so the colony can grow quickly, especially if proper nutritional resources are in place. They generally forage on pollen to provide protein for the bees in the developing brood. And the nectar, which can be cured into honey, also supplies them their carbohydrates to help draw the wax out and basically survive. So the colony builds up. They can get to 50, 60,000 individuals in a colony. And then at that point, they can really be driven towards honey production, especially if there's enough resources and enough healthy bees. They can make a substantial amount of honey per colony. Then as the season progresses in different parts of the country, if the nutrition starts becoming restricted, their growth slows and their population declines, and they try to get to a reasonable amount of healthy bees to go through the winter. And obviously the winter can be very different across the country. And so a lot of the commercial beekeepers will actually move bees to warmer climates to overwinter them.
So part of the natural order, they will start to die off if you're going through the winter and the population size will contract.
Exactly.
So now what's colony collapse disorder?
So colony collapse disorder is actually defined as a syndrome. It has specific set of symptoms. It's often confused with colony decline or colony loss. A colony can fail from varroa mites or poor nutrition or a number of different reasons, but the colony collapse disorder is essentially the bees vanish. You have a lot of young bees, a queen, but the foragers are gone. A lot of the house bees are gone. There's a delayed onset of robbing where other bees will basically take the resources from a colony for their own, but there seems to be a delay in that. There's a delay in pests. There's no dead bees on the ground in front of the colony. So typically a pesticide kill or other things that can kill colonies, you would see dead bees in front of the colony. Colony collapse disorder, that's not the case. In addition, there's another criteria where you have low varroa mite and low Nosema levels. So all of these things have to really be in place to be defined as colony collapse disorder. And a lot of these are qualitative data, so it's also tricky to diagnose as well. And because there's no known cause of it, it's really disconcerting because, again, your bees just vanish.
Yeah. So we still don't know what the story is. I remember hearing for a while people were saying, oh, no, it's our cell phones. You know, it's like screwing up their natural radar and they don't know how to find their way home. And then I was like, oh, my God, like cell phones are going to destroy all of civilization. You know, like.
Yes. No, I can say for certainty it's not cell phones. That was a very, I would say, poorly done study that was taken out of context and then kind of gobbled up by, I think, the popular media. But the general thought is it's a suite of effects happening synergistically that creates the perfect storm to have these bees decline. So maybe it's poor nutrition combined with pesticide exposure, combined with high viral levels within the colony. Mm. And so maybe one of these things acts as a tipping point, and then you have the colony collapse. But a relatively recent paper is discussing more along like the digestive tract, and I would say the gut health of the bees as potentially diagnostic.
And then from like a layperson's perspective, like, mm-hmm. you know, for a while we were hearing these stories and it was very apocalyptic. It was very much like, oh my God, we're going to lose bees. They're going to go extinct and our food system's going to crumble. And I feel like I've been hearing that less and less. Is it just because we started ignoring it, or is it because there's actually, you know, we're finding ways to overcome it?
So I think the story is beekeepers, especially at the commercial level, are really finding ways to overcome this. And the reality is honeybees are not going extinct. We still experience high annual colony losses. They hover anywhere between 30 to 40%, which if you put that in context of other agricultural animals or other livestock, to lose 40% of the nation's cattle would be catastrophic. But that's an annual loss for honeybees, and the really good beekeepers are able to maintain and increase their numbers by splitting and doing some more complex management to make sure that we have enough colonies in the United States to carry out pollination services. I tell people it's tough being a honeybee colony in the United States. There's a lot of transportation involved that is stressful. The monoculture that's happening is challenging for the bees as well. Agricultural pesticides, in addition to some of the pesticides I have to put in my own colony to mitigate some of the pathogens. All this is very challenging. So I would say it's not becoming easier to manage colonies, both commercially or at the backyard level. But it's something, as we learn more and through research, we're able to equip beekeepers with tools to better manage their hives and to create scenarios where they're still able to be successful.
Well, that's good news.
Yes.
But then, you know, there are wild bees, too, and other pollinators as well. It's not just honeybees, right? So if people wanted to help, would using those pollinator houses that you find in gardening stores or like something like that, does that help?
Absolutely. So I feel that honeybees often get the spotlight as they're charismatic, they're easily managed compared to some of the native pollinators, and I would say non-apis pollinators. The non-apis pollinators are very important, both from a production standpoint and from just an ecological standpoint. One thing people can do is provide the bee hotels. Planting forage provides habitat for the non-apis pollinators as well. So flowers, blooming plants, they can be trees. Honeybees specifically do well with fruit trees. The forage mix would need to be a number of different plants because bees need different sources of pollen for their diverse nutrition. So planting a few different varieties, both for pollen and for nectar, would be ideal.
Well, it's great to know that there's something that regular people can do to help along. Thanks so much for coming in, Bernardo.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bernardo Nino is the educational supervisor of the California Master Beekeeper Program at UC Davis, and he's the head of research and development at UBees,